Okay, let's begin. I think we're one or two people short of a quorum. We'll watch out, but let's. We want to make sure we get through the bills this morning before session. So our first bill is. I think we have the House file that's come over. House file 2446, Senator Reinhart.
It's 11 bills.
So is there a division?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee. Thank you. Appreciate the time this morning. So members of the committee, I have Senate file 2028. And this is a file that deals partially with, well, let me back up. This is a file that represents the work of primarily a House Select Subcommittee focused just on synthetic drugs that one of my House members, Representative Simonson, who's here this morning, chaired. They spent the interim traveling the state and focusing on the issue of synthetic drugs, one that we got to know too well in Duluth because of one of our particular businesses. And this bill represents recommendations from their task force. I want to thank a couple members of your committee, Senator Miller, Senator Sieben, who I don't see yet this morning, who are also co-authors on the bill. So we saw part of this in Senator Sharon's Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill, but there are a couple other provisions that are not in. And, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. I don't know at which point you'd like me to take that up.
If you want to present that now, that's fine. We do have a quorum.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A7 amendment. Members of the committee, the A7 amendment is an appropriation that's in the House bill. It's an appropriation of $163,000 in fiscal year 2014. That goes to the Department of Health. And members, primarily what that does is provide some funding in the DARE program so that the folks that are doing the work within the DARE program also start doing work around the synthetic drug issue. There's some social media, a website that's involved in it as well, but that's probably the biggest value added that comes from that. There's also a very small $5,000 appropriation that goes to the Board of Pharmacy that Mr. Weiberg, Dr. Weiberg, can talk about that supports the cease and desist authority. That cease and desist is in the Senator Sharon's bill that we passed off the floor earlier this week as well. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Reinhart, in reviewing your bill yesterday and when I just sat down for a second, the fiscal note I saw was the $5,000 to the Board of Pharmacy, which was fine. But the rest of your amendment, to be honest, it's the first I've seen of this or heard of it. I'm not so sure it's fine. We've reached a point, and you know, there are several members of this committee, obviously, who are on the Finance Conference Committee, and the other division chairs are involved. We're kind of reaching a point where we don't have money. So how necessary is the public awareness campaign at this point?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Simonson and I would say that if we don't, and I appreciate your position, Mr. Chairman. I think $163,000 it's your bill, but I think it's a small amount that's really targeted at what we found to be one of the most critical components of this issue, and that is a generation younger than us who thinks, okay, if these products are out there, they're okay. If it's illegal, that's one thing. If they're synthetic but legal, they must be okay. And there is a whole comprehension around understanding what the components are.
Yeah, and Senator Reiner, don't misunderstand me. I'm not addressing the merits of what you suggest. I'm doing this from my role as a scrivener of the Senate.
Understood, Mr. Chair.
That is there something, you know, we can direct the department? You know, we'll be giving the Department of Human Services $10, $11 million for their salary supplement, $20 million in the tails. We're going to give the department, Senator Lurie's division is meeting right now, so he's not here to comment on this. I would expect we will increase the Senate appropriation for compliance with Judge Frank's order relative to the sex offender program to an amount, I'm guessing, that I think is unnecessary. I don't know that we're doing that for a fact, but I'm guessing. So we're going to be handing that particular agency in a supplemental budget year for fiscal year 15 something like another $10, $11 million on top of some other money, you know, we're giving them. Do they have $163,000 somewhere that they could use toward this? Or in the alternative, is there something else that's non-general fund that could be used for that appropriation?
Mr. Chairman, I would say two things. One, DHS is here if you'd like to ask that question. I think your gavel probably gets a better answer than maybe I do. But I would also offer that I know Dr. Weiberg has said as far as their appropriation that they could make do. And it would seem to me, following your line of questioning, that DHS could probably do this as well with resources that they already have. But I think your direction on that is probably stronger than mine.
Well, why don't we try that? And you know, Senator Lurie's not here, and so we don't have Mr. Albrecht here. But I'll make sure Mr. Naumann talks to Mr. Albrecht about what we're doing. If there's a problem, we can try to take a look within the conference committee. But I would strongly prefer to do it that way. Again, I've tracked the $5,000. To the Board of Pharmacy, but to show up, I'm not blaming you. My rhetoric sounds a little bit stronger than I meant, but to have this at this point, given to the agency that's getting more money, with the exception of the Department of Corrections, than any agency in the state, and an agency that has an immense budget as it is. You know, what the agency is saying, well, it's a new program, and obviously something that, as you suggest, has a degree of importance, and we can't do it. And I think over the years I've heard that, I don't know, somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 times. So.
And Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Reiner, I'm wondering, given this line of thinking, if it might be appropriate to actually use a piece of your amendment and to perhaps say something like the Department of Human Services is required to conduct a public awareness campaign of the dangers of synthetic drugs, and then to say the educational awareness campaign must be designed to reach. And so, in other words, you would, in fact, give the direction to do this campaign and keep the integrity of your language with regard to what you want in the campaign. And so all you'd have to do is just delete the appropriations language in the amendment?
Senator Bonoff, let me jump in. One of the nice things about this place is staff is always about 5 steps ahead of us. It always embarrasses me because I think I'm really on to something really bright, but they already are far ahead of me. Apparently, at some point late last night in reviewing this bill and understanding that there was something like this at play, because I was not aware of it, Mr. Naumann had prepared some language.
Okay. And I'm not aware of that either, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Cavanaugh prepared the language, making my point. So she prepared the language, and to be honest with you, Senator Reinhart, you know, I think Ms. Cavanaugh began work for the Senate, I believe, before I showed up in the Senate. Oh, no, I'm sorry, only 20 years. I take that back.
Do we have a legislature then? No, I'm sorry.
Do we have a legislative staffer? Yeah.
Territorial legislature.
We have Joanne Zoff. We've got some others. Anyway, Ms. Cavanaugh has been here for a long time and knows the agency as well as anybody in this building, I would suggest. Anyway, what she prepared, and actually I've got an amendment, which I think accomplishes your purpose, also allows us to understand that this is a public awareness campaign, and I certainly accept what you're suggesting, but it directs the commissioners of Education, Health, and Human Services, so Education, Health, and Human Services, to work on this, because obviously it's a health issue, it's arguably a public education issue, and it's a human service issue, and we have two agencies that are really large and one agency that is mid-range large. And I'll bet they've got $163,000 sitting out there combined.
So, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair, essentially the A8 amendment, which I believe you've asked to be handed out, is essentially the same as the A7, to Senator Bonhoff's point, without the appropriation.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is not an uncommon dynamic where agencies are asked to internalize the cost of something that a fiscal note, which is advisory, has flagged as a cost.
And Senator Miner, I realize this amendment looks a little bit like a setup. I honestly had not seen it until it was just handed me, you know, a few seconds ago. So let's let – we're distributing it, but let's let Senator Reinhart take a look at it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it does what you suggested earlier. Actually, it does what Senator Bonhoff had suggested. It maintains the direction to the appropriate agencies as well as the breadth of the – of what we would like to see in the campaign, but, you know, directs them to do it with existing funds. And that was, Mr. Chairman, where you were going before my comment was going to be, I would just hope we have some very strong direction that we do want this to take place if the appropriation is not going to be there, and I feel like this does get us there.
Now, Senator Reinhart, let me suggest a couple of things. One, we'll have a chance to talk to Senator Laurie, and I'll ask Mr. Nauman to talk to Mr. Albrecht about your A7 amendment as well as the counter A8 amendment. The second thing is I can assure you that if these combined agencies have a problem, they'll be lined up at my door at some point. So inevitably that will happen if it's a real problem. So I don't know what you think of A8. So, obviously, you're not a member of the committee, so you haven't offered an amendment. I know, so I'm not sure anybody offered the A7 amendment because I interrupted things. So, I don't know. We've had discussion. Senator Miller?
I'll move the A8 amendment.
Okay. So, Senator Miller moves the A8 amendment. So, we've had some discussion. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little further discussion, if I could. Could you tell me how this is going to be implemented? Just a real lower level, how this is going to happen, how the kids are going to find and get the information.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, if I could invite DHS up just to make a comment on that.
Certainly. Just welcome. Just want to identify yourself and happy to listen to you.
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, my name is Thomas Reuter. I am the Director of Operations Support for State Operated Services with the Department of Human Services, and I'm also covering the legislative work for the Chemical and Mental Health Administration. With the appropriation that was associated in the original bill for $163,000, the Department of Human Services would be working with the Department of Education and the Department of Health through the State Substance Abuse Strategy Group to create a public awareness campaign. This would employ one FTE that would allow for a more responsive and robust campaign. So our intent was that we would be creating a website that would be available. Website and social media that would reach out to the young individuals who it would reach out to individuals who are of a younger age than I, Mr. Chair, who would be tapping into this the need for this information. If there are questions and such, this individual would be responsible for answering those questions and for coordinating amongst those agencies the responses necessary to get information back to that individual or between those government agencies.
And so, Mr. Reuter, you've been Sarah Engelbertson. So, Mr. Reuter, you've been present during the discussion, and I recognize you're not the chief financial officer for the agency. Any reason why this combination of agencies couldn't put together the website and proceed as planned?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe that our original intent was for this to be a more robust campaign. Probably what we would do is we would align this within the existing structure of the department and how the department currently does public awareness campaigns in the state substance abuse prevention strategy. So it would fall within that type of structure and would be less than what it could have been.
But you would begin the work on this, the planning on this, during the next several months? Would that be?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So if it appeared that the need for the campaign, or not the need, but the ability to put together an effective campaign was falling a little bit short, we're in session in January, and it would be easy then, I would assume, to include this as part of the governor's budget at that point. Again, I'm not asking you to speak for the commissioner or, you know, the chief financial officer for the agency, but I've seen that numerous times where if something doesn't quite get over the threshold, that it's that much easier to, particularly in the supplemental budget year, to look to do something in the regular budget and tax year when we're dealing with the entirety of the state budget. So does this language direct you, allow you, and then we see where we are in January or in the promulgation of the governor's budget, which will start taking place, September, October?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the proposed language in the A8 amendment does provide some flexibility for the commissioner for how to implement the public awareness campaign. I would just call your attention to that this is I believe the original intent of the appropriation request was for a specific campaign related to synthetic drugs. The existing campaigns, prevention campaign structure that we have in place, we could fit this within that. So.
And I don't mean to kind of, drive this into the ground, but we'll get a chance to see if this works. Because I understand what Senator Reiner is trying to accomplish, and I'm not in any way dismissive of that. To the contrary, but obviously late in the game, if we're trying to adjourn by next week or Monday or Tuesday, whenever, it's going to. It's just awfully late in terms of where we are with the budget. But if there's a problem, I'm sure I'll see the commissioner over, these next few days. I'll mention it to her, and I don't know, she's a constituent. She could always knock on my door or something. Certainly from the commissioner, again, or the other, the deputy commissioner, I'll make sure I ask as well. And certainly the governor has talked about trying to look for efficiencies in state government and working on an interagency basis and hope this would work and, again, accomplish what Senator Reinhart wants to do. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the fiscal note, it talks about a half FTE educational specialist, and then he mentioned in his testimony that they were looking for a full-time person to take on this, what they call, I heard him say, state substance awareness group. Is that something new that's going to be another division or subdivision within the umbrella of education, health, and human services? Is that my understanding?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the state substance abuse strategy group, which is what I mentioned earlier in my testimony, is already a present organization. a collaborative between the various departments.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rudin, I would like to say on the record that I don't accept the frame around the comments back to Senator Cohn when you said that it would no longer be a focused campaign but would be within an umbrella of a larger thing because of the lack of appropriation. I would ask that you take the A8 as amended as a true direct request to do a specific campaign around synthetic drugs. We've had deaths from synthetic drugs. This is a very serious issue. I, too, believe it can be done within the confines of the current agency. As I know, a social media campaign is about creativity and talent, and I'm sure your agency is filled with young people who have creativity and talent with regard to executing social media campaigns. And in addition, because the Department of Education is named, I would expect that the Commissioner of Education would be happy to make sure that the schools are able to also be a vehicle to communicate this message. I think it's very crucial at this time that the state take strong action with regard to synthetic drug awareness.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Bonoff, thank you. I mean, that I think if we don't have the dollar figure is exactly the direction the committee needs to give the three different agencies that are listed in the A8 amendment.
And just relative to kind of these general comments about can the agency do it or not, I asked Mr. Nauman to just pull out the number. The central office for DHS alone is $205 million. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can't have half of that for the drug awareness program, $205 million.
When you're chairman of the committee, you bet.
Yeah. We soon better. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was busy working on something different here. The A7 amendment came forward with $163,000. Mr. Chair, you made some comments about that being too much. Right, or there's not enough dollars for that.
Well,
so we've dropped it down to $5,000 for this awareness program now. Am I missing something?
Well, Senator Ingebrigtsen, a couple things. With adoption of the A8 amendment, we still continue the awareness program. We're asking the agencies to work with existing budgets, number one. Number two, as Mr. Nauman just pulled out, the budget for the particular agency in question is pretty significant. Three, we're at a point in the session where we are literally, I think they would agree, looking around the table, Senator Bonoff, to a lesser extent, Senator Saxhog, Senator Tomasoni, Senator Wieger's left, Senator Lori's downstairs, will confirm, I believe, that we're talking now about 5,000 here, 10,000 there. And it's difficult at this stage where I'd not, other than glancing at the fiscal note, had not been made aware of the cost prior to this. And again, and you've participated in these conference committees and know that at a certain point, you know, the money does disappear. To be honest, I had held on to some money for quite a while. You know, I got instructions yesterday we've been engaged in conversations, Representative Carlson, myself, but with Senator Bach and Speaker Thiessen, but I haven't done everything with that, and I got instructions yesterday, which I informed the conferees of last night, on a couple of other items that are to be covered by the supplemental finance bill, one at a cost of $1.7 million, and the money starts to disappear. So I can assure you, we had conversations last night about a couple thousand dollars. So it becomes difficult.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the situation you're in. It's just that I, obviously, I haven't been participating in that, but I haven't been paying attention to the numbers. And you talk about the synthetic
porn, synthetic drugs that's taking some of our youth out of our community here.
So bad.
And programs in our schools, but I kind of like the idea of the high-tech thing where the kids can actually go in and you know, I'm gonna take a look at this stuff to see, you know, really what effects it has. If they do before they ingest this, it's in their best interest, obviously. But it just seems to me that we're talking about a lot of dollars around here. I mean, I'm hearing $260 million worth of cash going into a spending bill. In that same realm of bonding, and we can't come up with more than $5,000 here to program does happen. Go from 163 to 5,000. Yeah. I appreciate it. Getting down to the end here, you've got to put your numbers together. And that's a different budget. I understand that, Senator Cohen, but those that are paying attention and listening and that really care about this really don't understand all that. They just know that you're talking about many millions over here, and you're looking at drug awareness over here for our children at $5,000, and that's too much.
A couple things, Senator Ingebrigtsen. First, I think listening to Senator Reinhart present this, nobody is disagreeing with the substance, the intent, or the need, number one. Number two, I've been around here a few years now, and you know full well that, the public out there doesn't quite understand legislative process. That's why you're elected, is to participate in the legislative process, because you do understand it, and no more so than understand the details and the intricacies of neurosurgery, and would not presume to know what the neurosurgeon is doing or the cardiac surgeon is doing at any particular given time. In the same way, and you know, the analogy's not complete, but obviously, when we deal with the budget, I don't presume that everybody in the state of Minnesota is going to have quite a sense of, you know, what Mr. Nauman or the fiscal analysts do on a daily basis in terms of looking at the budgets. And you know, you were a budget chairman. You worked with the staff, and you have a perfect sense of that. Three, however, I would certainly make an offer to yourself and Senator Reinhart. Senator Reinhart's bill is going to be on the floor. If there is a non-general fund that could be utilized for this that doesn't count against our budget balance and would be available, I'd be happy to have that substitute and would be willing to do it on the floor because, again, it would be a non-general fund appropriation. If you can think of something between now and whenever the bill is on the floor Tuesday or so, run the amendment by me. Run it by Mr. Nauman, and would be happy to look at it that way. Sir Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, two or three years ago, I don't remember which session it was anymore, Senator Reinhart and I worked together on a bill that involved this synthetic drug problem up in Duluth. And I remember how concerned Senator Reinhart was with what was going on in Duluth. I came to believe that it was the synthetic drug problem is very, very significant and candidly, as Senator Bonhoff has pointed out, really dangerous for our youth. This is really some ugly stuff. And I would simply encourage the members of this committee, and I would encourage the chair, and I will do my best also, to try and figure out a way to come up with the money to fund the educational program that Senator Reinhart is asking for. Because, you know, I can't believe that within our budget and what we are spending, that we cannot come up with under $200,000 to put forth an educational program that will protect our children against this really, really dangerous issue of these synthetic drugs. And quite frankly, just remember what happens here is these young chemists that are out there are out in front of us, just like you were, Mr. Chairman, you're talking about our staff being in front of us. These young folks that are creating these synthetic drugs are really talented, misguided but talented. And what they do is they change somehow the compound on what is being sold, mm-hmm. and there's no controls over it whatsoever. And by simply changing the compound, all of a sudden we've got something that is no longer illegal. And that's what Senator Reinhart and I were trying to accomplish with the Board of Pharmacy a few years ago. So please reconsider what's going on here, and someplace within the hundreds of millions of dollars that we are spending, there's got to be $160,000 for this program.
Well, Senator Newman, as I indicated, as we sit here this morning, I don't have it, number one. Number two, I will have the opportunity, I'm sure, to talk to the commissioner. Number three, I will talk to Senator Lori. Senator Reinhart, I would encourage you to do the same, just because Senator Lori is going to have a more detailed knowledge of the budget. And to be honest, in the context, within the context, I mean, he's not here. So that's another reason for my hesitation. I'm not speaking for Senator Lori, but it's possible that if he were here, he might know of something that could be redirected within his budget. But he's not here. He's chairing his division on another drug issue this morning. And separate from Senator Lori or the commissioner, I would invite you, and I'm dead serious, all of us have been a member, all of us around this table have been a member of the legislature for a number of years. That we have no freshmen who are members here, and or anybody who's totally new to the legislature. And we know perfectly well that even though, we hope to finish the session in, 7-8 days, whatever, that, that can be a lifetime around this place. And if you're dead serious, you folks know the budget. You're welcome to, like I said, to work with Mr. Albrecht and with the commissioner or whatever and see if there's some other funding source. In the meantime, I'll talk to Senator Lori about where he is with his budget. At this stage of the game, particularly in his absence, I find it difficult to speak to his budget.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Jackson.
Mr. Chairman, just to add a little bit to this discussion, while the number $168,000 in the big scheme of things doesn't sound like much, just in my small budget area, the difference between the economic development article in the House and the economic development article in the Senate, it's $29 million. And the difference between the environment and ag article in the House and in the Senate, it's another $23 million. So just in my division alone, there's a difference of almost $53 million. And so when you start adding little things in like $168,000, suddenly they become real money because you got to. We're trying to find $53 million just for my division, and so that becomes a really big number, and suddenly $168,000 starts adding things up. And so, while the use for it is definitely meritorious, the questions become where does the money come from at this late in the session.
But I've suggested some ideas, and again, I'm dead serious about taking me up on that. Senator Miller.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion, the A8 amendment. But before I do that, you mentioned possible adjournment by Monday or Tuesday. Was that next week you were thinking, Monday, Tuesday, or the following week? Curious.
You know, I've been in the legislature for a while. I'm always optimistic.
Right.
How long has that been?
We always say we're going to go.
Since I was 25 years old, and I was younger than Senator Miller when I was elected. So, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, just reading through some of the descriptions here in the fiscal note, it talks about BCA having aware of these possible retailers that are out there selling drugs. I'm wondering if public safety or BCA or somewhere they could be a part of this collaboration to. They might have some extra money, too.
Yeah, and that's, Senator Anderson, involvement, I would think, particularly of public safety at work. Senator Miller has moved the A8 amendment. If you want to offer an amendment to the amendment, and the author can speak to it, Senator Miller can speak to it.
Mr. Chair, I'd include public safety in on line 1.7 as part of that
Okay.
Collaboration.
Just so we have the proper verbiage, Mr. Bodern, what would you suggest?
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 70 of the amendment, after the second comma, insert public safety.
Senator Reinhart and Senator Miller? Senator Miller?
Mr. Chair, I'm okay with it as long as Senator Reinhart's okay with it.
Senator Reinhart? Okay, so that's incorporated into Senator Miller's amendment. Is there further discussion on the A8 amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to belabor this, but now something just came up to in my thought process here, too, when it comes to drug enforcement and drug awareness. We just recently dealt with the forfeiture statute, as you all know, on the floor. And I think the statute's very clear that those dollars that are divided up amongst law enforcement, county attorney, and the state of Minnesota can be used to investigate crimes that are involved with that particular forfeiture. And a lot of our forfeitures come from drug forfeitures. And at least I can speak from my part of the neck of the woods. We used to use a lot of that towards our drug awareness for kids through the DARE programs and things like that. So there's another funnel of dollars that could be looked at. Now, I don't know if you want – I don't think it's appropriate to put that in statute. Maybe it is, but I'd be more than happy to work with Senator Reinhart on that aspect of it as well. So there is another avenue there of some dollars.
My only caution with that, Senator Britson, is that money would already have been brought into the general fund. So it's been used in some way. But I think by direction to these agencies, and particularly with Senator Anderson's suggestion, it becomes easier then to look at some of the kinds of funds that are coming in. And if there's the ability to make the connection, and certainly if forfeiture monies are bringing in more than has been planned, that would be something. I mean, because the other part of this is, you know, one of the things we hear in this place, and this bill, I don't mean to use you as an example for this, but, you know, we all come in with good intentions, and all of us complain about, you know, do we kind of overmanage? And I'd like to think that the agencies, and I've been around for several administrations now, and I don't care if it's, you know, Governor Dayton or Governor Plenty, or if I go back to when I was a kid here with Governor Perpich. Yeah, I've always been impressed generally with the quality of commissioners appointed by the governors, and as a consequence, the deputy commissioners and so on. You know, not 100%, but, you know, pretty much. And I'd like to think that they all have some ability to sit down now, and particularly with what Senator Anderson did. You know, it's pretty easy to direct somebody from each of the agencies to just kind of brainstorm this and see where they are. And I know my experience as an author has been that if I have something that I've worked on, I'll stay on top of it. I have no doubt Senator Reinhart is quite confident he'll stay on top of it. And I bet we'll accomplish exactly what's intended. And number one, if you come up with a better idea over these next couple of days, there's still opportunity. And two, if it doesn't work, I'll hear from the commissioner and can at that point try to revisit with Senator Laurie. And three, if it doesn't work post-adjournment, the governor will be putting the budget together fairly quickly. Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Reinhart, looking at the A8 amendment, Section 9 talks in terms of educational awareness campaign. Section 10 is an appropriation for the costs attributable to the board's cease and desist authority. In your bill, page 3, up on beginning on line 3.3, that's the cease and desist authority that is being considered. Are you comfortable, Senator Reinhart, that the $5,000 in appropriation, given the wording in Section 10, will be used for educational awareness?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, actually, the appropriation in Section 10 is not for educational awareness. It's for, and that was mentioned earlier, and I wanted to get a chance to clarify that. It is for the Board of Pharmacy to support their new cease and desist authority. So to be clear, if the committee adopts the A8, it would be with the strong direction. And Mr. Chairman, would I like the appropriation? Absolutely. Short of that, I would like this educational awareness campaign language to be in the bill with strong direction from this committee to the agencies to do this. And, the conversation here, I think, has been on that and has said, integrate this into the work that you are already doing around drug awareness. And if we find that to be inadequate, and I feel like I have several members of this committee along with myself who are going to be bird-dogging that, we will be back here asking for a unique effort around this issue.
So we have Senator Miller's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion on that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on the bill itself. And I think we have the House file. Oh, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The fiscal note talks about the Office of the Attorney General being involved with this and his or her contact with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I don't know how that would play into this situation or not as far as the Attorney General, but the fact that it was mentioned here in the fiscal note seems to lend some credence to the fact that they or she must have some concern about this situation also.
And I don't know, Senator Reinhardt.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, absolutely. Attorney General Swanson has been an active player in the House's select subcommittee. I know she personally was at a hearing we had in Duluth that went for several hours and took testimony from the public.
So do we have further discussion on the bill? Senator Miller?
I'd like to move the bill.
Okay, and we have, I think that's
as amended.
Yeah. Yes. So first, Senator Miller moves that the language of Senate File 2028 as amended. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Then we have, then Senator Miller moves House File 2446 with the language of Senate File 2028 as amended. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Reinhardt.
Thank you.
We'll
Mr.
be
Chairman,
in touch.
Committee.
And Senator Reinhardt was one of the members waiting very patiently yesterday as we did not get to other bills. Senator Schmidt. Was somebody else hanging around with us? So.
Chair. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can I just ask? I think session starts at 10.
11.
Okay, thank you. I was confused.
I know you would not want to be late, so. Senator Schmidt.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's nice to be able to join you this morning.
And Senator Schmidt, before we begin, Senator Thomas only moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Schmidt.
All right, Mr. Chair and members, we have the omnibus game and fish bill before you today. We're talking about much smaller fiscal impact than a number of bills that have come before this committee. Nonetheless, this is a bill that comes to us mostly from the DNR. It's technical changes, other modifications. There are a number of provisions for members as well. A lot of the policy was discussed at length in division. If folks would like to focus on the fiscal impact, we have roughly, 91,000 here in the next year ahead coming from the Game and Fish Fund, mostly for mileage reimbursements for citizen participation in committee in oversight committee, as well as some central shared service costs increase. And then we have some adjustments to licenses that do have a fiscal impact, all in the name of promoting participation in hunting and fishing in Minnesota. Ongoing challenge for DNR is to keep our numbers up and to invite the next wave of hunters and fishermen and women into that recreation. So with that said, I won't go through the entire bill here. If folks have any questions, I'm happy to entertain them. I know DNR would probably like to speak to this as well.
Obviously, the bill, I would guess, Senator Thomas, only has been heard fairly thoroughly in your division. Questions for Senator Schmidt?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, can we offer amendments?
Pardon?
Can we offer amendments now? Or can we offer amendments now, Mr. Chair?
If you'd like.
Okay, I thought you were still in the discussion, or was the DNR going
to
come up?
Well, Senator Schmidt indicated he'd be happy to answer questions and like to do it.
I do have an amendment.
Mr. Chair. I'm not sure what number it is. A16, I believe. I'd like to offer the A16 amendment.
If we could have the A16 amendment distributed, please.
Mr. Chair, I could say that it's on behalf of Senator Peterson. Senator Peterson could not be here today because of a family. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fishbach.
I understand there's an amendment on the floor, but is that it for explanation on this bill? I've never seen the bill before.
Well, Senator Schmidt, Senator Fishbach, I've had a chance to go through the bill.
Sure.
Well, Mr. Chair, I...
No, that's fine. Senator Schmidt, maybe you could offer a little bit more detail on the bill and...
Happy to do so, Mr. Chair and Senator Fishbach. We have much of this is addressing obsolete language that the DNR came to us with and technical changes. I would invite DNR to come here and address some of those concerns if they or some of those provisions in the bill if they'd like to. We move through here. I mean, it's almost entirely the removal of obsolete language or addressing changes in licensing costs or prices. I'm looking at some highlights here. Several member issues were involved here, but if we could, maybe we could refer to DNR here to give us an overview of some of their technical changes.
Certainly happy to listen.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Ed Bogus. I'm director of the Fish and Wildlife Division at the Department of Natural Resources, and this bill does consist primarily of DNR provisions, but there are a number of other provisions that Senator Schmidt indicated that did not originate with the agency. So I'll try to quickly go through and identify the DNR provisions. The sections 1, 2, and 3 relate to the uncession type, just eliminating obsolete language, some of it dating back to the 1920s that's no longer relevant. Section 4 and 5 and I believe there's another section later in the bill relate to making operation of snowmobiles during the firearms deer season consistent with current regulations for ATVs. And there's another section on ATV or a technical change on ATVs that we could Assistant Commissioner Meyer could explain more about that if there are questions from the committee. Section 7, 8, 9 also relate, or 7 and 8 also relate to ATVs. 9 is, again, unsession type, eliminating reference to an obsolete statute that's proposed to be repealed. Section 10 is more unsession, obsolete language. Section 11, same thing, technical references to language is proposed to be repealed. Section 12 is the same in the same vein of eliminating references to language proposed to be repealed. Section 13 is we've had a Game and Fish Fund Citizen Oversight Committee since the 1990s. It has some language on line 6.10 to 6.17, just clarifying that these are not advisory councils or committees governed by Section 15.059 and that the committee members cannot receive compensation but can receive reimbursement for mileage, which we have been doing over that period of time. But this just makes it all crystal clear how that committee functions and how it's classified in statute. Section 14, again, eliminates some obsolete language. We haven't had game farms in Minnesota for about 40 years. Section 15 is more ATV language. Section 16 relates to permitting to cross wildlife management areas to access private lands that are otherwise blocked. So that a landowner can get access to their property that otherwise would not be allowed. Section 17 expands our ability to issue refunds to people that purchase a license if it was incorrectly issued. Section 18 is in that same vein where it allows the commissioner to correct licenses and to make refund differences or charge differences in costs if there was a mistake in the issuance of a license if certain conditions are met. Section 19 relates to personal possession of licenses. Not seeing the change in Section 19. Section 20 is more of the obsolete language cross-referencing. 21 relates to licensing, and there are several sections in this bill, Mr. Chair and members, that relate to how people can document their disability eligibility for receiving free licenses. And so you'll see that in a number of places here, but it's to make it to give it an additional way to document that disability as public safety updates their driver's license system, that could be included on the driver's license, and then that this would recognize that as a legitimate documentation to obtain free hunting and fishing licenses. So that's what's going on in Section 21, Section 22, Section 23, Section 24. Then Section 25 and the next few sections, we're adjusting some lifetime license fees. About 2 years ago, I believe it was 2012, hunting and fishing license fees were adjusted by the legislature, but there were some changes late in that process, and they didn't all get reflected in the lifetime licenses because those are based off of the base license fees. So Section 25 and 26 adjust some lifetime license fees to bring them in line with what the annual license fees are. Same with 27, 28. Section 29 then relates to youth licensing for bear. There was inadvertently, when we created youth turkey and deer licenses, the bear licenses didn't get addressed. So this makes youth license fees for resident and non-resident bear licenses conform with how we're doing youth licensing for deer and wild turkey. Essentially, 12 to 17 year olds, it's a $5 license. Under that, it's free. So that's Section 29 for resident bear and 30 for non-resident youth bear. Section 31 relates to fees that agents can collect for licenses issued without a fee. A year ago, that was changed to allow a $1 issuing fee on a free license. That's created some unintended complications, so we're proposing to change that back to no fee, either for the license or for the issuance of the license. Section 32 eliminates some obsolete language related to forms for reporting roadkill deer. Section 34 makes some changes to the trespass statutes to make it clear that a person who knowingly enters land is told to leave dictates the penalty, and it also has in Section 35 some amendments to discharging firearms near stockades or corrals and the types of land where that applies. Section 36 is clarifying that electronic range finders, and there's another section that deals with that too, can be used for hunting without a permit. Section 37 I think the first section that did not originate from DNR, but it would allow crossbow hunting for age 60 or over. Currently, that's allowed only for people with disabilities. Section 38, again, makes it clear that use of range finders is legal for hunting from 1/2 hour before sunrise to sunset. Section 39 is some technical changes that clarifies that the current provision that prevents use of night vision equipment for hunting also applies to thermal imaging equipment. Section 40, and this is related, again, to the unsession where we've eliminated a bunch of different sections of statutes that were species-specific and consolidated all the small game authorities into one section. So we're eliminating or proposing to eliminate a bunch of sections related to small game and consolidate them into one section. So this, that requires some technical changes to other sections. So this puts all the Burrow and Den language into one section of statute. Section 41 is doing similar with fire and smoke and cutting trees. Section 42 relates back to the issue of documenting eligibility for disability free licenses by using a driver's license or Minnesota identification card. Section 43 eliminates some obsolete language related to elk management being restricted to non-agricultural areas. Section 44, this is the section that consolidates all the authorities for setting small game seasons into one section of statute rather than into 10 or so. Section 45 just is a technical correction of a 45, 46, 47 are technical corrections to names of divisions in the Department of Natural Resources. Section 48 is again relating to taking Canada geese causing damage and making it clear that that those that are being harassed or causing property damage, that that's not, doesn't require a permit to do that non-lethally. Section 49, again, is part of the consolidation of authorities for setting small game seasons, and just make it clear for migratory game birds that include seasons, limits, and areas. Section 50 requires invasive species training for minnow dealers and people working for minnow dealers. They can, they have to take the online training for aquatic invasive species. Section 51 requires commercial license holders who currently can use holding facilities to provide the legal description and verification of exclusive control of those holding facilities so that we know where those facilities are. And the last part of that section requires the commercial fishing operators to also complete the invasive species training as well as apprentices working for them. Section 52 is also dealing with the veteran disability issue and how that that could be identified on the driver's license. This is amending, actually not the game and fish laws, but section 171, which is in public safety. And it also makes all of this effective the day following enactment or the date the new driver and vehicle services technology system is implemented, whichever is later. So it's contingent upon the completion of their new system. Section 54 is did not originate with DNR, but this would allow for raffles that involve the legal taking of fish and game, like a big buck contest or something like that. Section 55 redirects some appropriation that has been in place since 2007 for shooting sports facilities to kind of redirect that still for shooting sports. This is out of the Heritage Enhancement account within the Game and Fish Fund to allow some of that to be a grant to the Itasca County Gun Club, which is being forced to relocate due to some land and mining issues, and also to do basic hunter education, firearm safety, and archery ranges on public lands. Section 56 allows the commissioner to refund differences for the price of lifetime licenses in this bill. If someone bought a license at the incorrect price since a year ago March, they would be able to be refunded the difference in that. Section 57, again, relates to the consolidation of small game authorities because the gray partridge, also known as Hungarian partridge, limits are currently only in statute. This would allow the commissioner to move those into rule using a good cause exemption. Section 58 also did not originate with the department and relates to the minimum size of muskellunge. It provides for generally an increase in the current statewide minimum is 48 inches. It would increase that to 50 inches and require the commissioner to establish a limit of 56 on at least 20 additional lakes after taking public input. Section 59 is related to the snowmobile and ATV issue during the deer season that I talked about earlier. Section 60 also did not originate with the department, but deals with control of narrow leaf or hybrid cattail in Loring Park in Minneapolis. Section 61 is a quail recovery plan report that requires the department to do a feasibility study for the restoration of wild quail in Minnesota. Section 62 requires working with a non-state entity to establish a fishing pier on Long Lake in Stearns County, also did not originate with the department. Section 63 was in the original department proposal that would, it's dealing with a trademark issue on conibear-type traps where the term conibear is a trademark term. And then the repealers are they're not included in this engrossment, but they're repealing the obsolete and outdated statutes as part of that session.
Mr. Chair and members, if you'd like me to go over the individual provisions that were added from other member bills, I'd be happy to do that. I'm not sure what the level of interest in that policy is, but there's probably a half a dozen or so that I could go
sure,
over.
Sure, if you just want to mention them.
Yeah, sure. Starting with Section 37, this is a provision from Senator Saxhog, which would essentially allow for persons 60 years of age or over to use crossbows during the typical archery season for taking deer, bear, turkey, or rough fish, allowing participation of elderly hunters to continue, not elderly, but older hunters to continue. Moving on, I should just mention that Section 48, even though it was, this is related to the Canadian geese causing damage and allowing for their removal, this is actually from a bill that Senator Brown introduced last year, but it was included in DNR's bill that they came to us with this year. Again, that's Section 48. We do have Section 54, which came from Senator Tomasoni, which would essentially allow for an organization that is permitted to by the Gambling Control Board to conduct raffles, to do those in conjunction with a wild game or fish-taking event. And then we move to Section 58, which regards the muskie size limit, and that came from Senator Hoffman. This provision was amended in division, but that is originally from a Senator Hoffman bill. And then moving forward, we have Section 60 is from Senator Dibble. This was in our bill last year. It fell out, though, in negotiations with the House in the final days. But this would take care of a problem in Loring Park regarding cattails, and there's concerns over the safety because they've grown so tall and pervasive in that area. The Quail Recovery Plan report is actually a bill of mine that's included here. These quail are found in southeastern Minnesota. I hear stories time and time again. We just ask DNR to conduct a feasibility study on their full return. And then let's see here. We had mentioned Section 62, a Long Lake fishing pier provision from Senator Ingebrigtsen. And then I think that takes care of it from member bills. So we've tried to include a number of good ideas that came to us along the way.
Just one question, Senator Schmidt. This is something that Mr. Nauman and I had noted. On Section 48, I understand the issue. It's Canada geese causing damage. So I understand the issue of the geese causing damage and how you need to, you know, protect the land. What's contemplated by hazing a Canadian goose?
You know, I've actually asked DNR if this is a technical term, and I would love for them to weigh in on this. But nonetheless, I think the idea here is that we can scare the geese away and keep them from causing damage.
I understand non-lethally scare, chase, but how do you haze a goose? I mean, force the goose to stay up all night, or what do you do?
Stick his head in the toilet.
Mr. Chair,
it's a non-technical term.
They're not in a fraternity.
And I'm just wondering, if you carry it to, as I understand the phrase, this is actually why. Well, if you carry it to its logical conclusion, if the geese or goose successfully completes the hazing, do they then get to, you know, pledge the goose fraternity or what? I mean, I've never seen that word in statute before in this kind of context.
We're going, Mr. Chair, if I could, we're in uncharted waters here, and I think we'll have to report back to the committee next year on how these efforts have played out. But in seriousness, I do think it refers to, you know, creating noise, actually, to kind of keep them away. But great question for us, and I'd be happy to work with DNR to come back to you next year on that.
And Mr. Chair, just quickly, it is a term used in wildlife damage management.
It
generally involves noisemakers or pyrotechnic type, firecracker type, but I think it would work with or without the word.
So I want to keep it in there, because then next year we can have an unsession and we can take out like words that make no sense and, to kind of continue the unsession thought. So, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bogus, just the other day I had a gentleman who is a duck and geese hunter, goose hunter, I should say, and he was asking me about the issue of he goes outstate to do mainly his duck hunting and other wild game. But he was asking about flat boat, where you basically lay in a boat, and he was wondering what the possibility of the DNR being able to allow that to happen here in Minnesota, and I didn't know there was a restriction, but maybe there is, and so I said I would ask, and now that you're here at the table, I just thought I'd see if you could give me some feedback on that issue, and he was asking why Minnesota doesn't have it, and I wasn't aware that it didn't have it, so.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, Minnesota is one of the few states that has not allowed the use of like layout boats that allow you to go offshore and hunt. But actually this past fall for the first time we did allow it on some limited lakes. It's not prohibited by federal law, but it's been prohibited by state law forever, I think. And so And the idea behind why it was prohibited, Minnesota has had a law that you have to be in vegetation. So you have to be near the shore. You have to be on an island, a point, either on the shore or in vegetation. And the idea with we generally are in the top five states in terms of number of duck hunters, and it creates a lot of pressure on ducks and can cause them to just move on through the state and go somewhere else. And so we've had that longstanding law that you can't hunt in open water in those types of boats, but our duck hunters are declining. We think there are some lakes where that can be done safely and not haze all the waterfowl off the lake. So we've tried it on a few of the large lakes this last year. I don't know what particular lake your constituent was interested in, but we may expand that to more lakes in the future.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Anderson.
Mr. Bogus, he was saying that Minnesota has had a long-standing not allowance of this particular type of hunting, and he just says, you know, why not keep the duck hunters here in Minnesota that want to do that? He said, well, I can go to other states that are openly permitting of this to go on. He says, Minnesota's losing money, and I go, no, it just didn't come to. So I just thought I'd run that by you and see how big of a deal is it would be? What would it entail as far as fees or licenses or things like that? So he's asking me for next session to introduce that information.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, just quickly on that, we already have the authority to do it. We did it on, I can't remember if it was maybe eight lakes or so this past fall. We'll be evaluating how that went. There wouldn't be any additional fees or costs to do it. It's just a regulation change to allow it. So if he has particular lakes that he's interested in, we'll check with you. Maybe we'll try to work with you and your constituent on that.
Thank you.
Senator Sagsuk.
Mr. Chair, I can't remember if we have a amendment on the table right now, because I have an oral amendment.
No, are there other questions for Mr. Bogus? If not, no. Senator Britson had his A16 amendment distributed, A16. So that's what we have in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just one quick comment. I know with the hazing situation, we have to be gender specific. I know that's been part of the discussion because of the nesting season and things like that. So we have to be.
I'm sorry, I don't know why that strikes me. I'm just envisioning all these drunk geese, forced to stay up late all night.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, the A16 amendment is is actually the Peterson Amendment, and I apologize to the senator if maybe he did get in contact with you with regards to this. It's basically the same amendment that was put on the Marty bill on the floor just a couple of days ago by this body. And members, what it is pertains to page 4, adds after line 11 and insert the following language. And what it does, it just opens up the month of August for the sport of baiting to allow four-wheelers to be able to go actually to put their stand up and also return during the month of August, which right now is not law, but the month of August, this would allow the baiters to actually haul their bait to the bait site for baiting black bear. And what's happened in the past, and at least my experience in talking with those that have bear hunted, and I have myself, is that the older the enthusiasts get, the tougher it gets to put your stand off the trail, off the beaten path, if you will, a regulated trail. And so they haven't end up carrying these large bales of, or excuse me, large pails of various types of bait, which is legal in Minnesota to do. Members should know that the bait site is licensed, so at any given time the conservation officer can come by or drive to it, and they'll know exactly who actually is registered to that bait site. This affords them the opportunity for another approximately 30 days to be able to do that with a four-wheeler off the trail to the site and back. Now, I will tell you with experience, this will probably happen two or three times a week, depending upon how much they want to bait a particular area. There will only be one trip, of course, for the to actually put the stand up, unless it's a permanent stand. If it's a permanent stand, of course, it would be on private property. But they're not the folks that are concerned about this, and I understand it somewhat. But again, you're going to know who's going to and from there because the site is licensed. And quite frankly, the bear enthusiast, the hunter, is not going to want to drive fast, not going to want to tear up the soil going to and from for obvious reasons. I mean, the bear is going to know somebody's around if there's a beaten path. So they're going to be very very careful. It's not going to be the ones that you have to worry about. I know the DNR is concerned and parties are concerned about people coming along and seeing a trail going off the trail and they start following it themselves. Well, they can do that now, not necessarily legally, but they can do that now. If somebody wanders off the trail, really and truly, we don't like to see that, but I don't know that we should necessarily punish the bear enthusiasts for trying to get off the trail. And another thing for getting off the beaten path and a little further off is that those four-wheeler enthusiasts that actually just do the four-wheeling can actually do so without having to worry about interfering with somebody's hunting. They'll actually can go 300 yards off the trail instead of 150 or 300 feet versus 150. So it does make for a better cooperation, if you will, between the outdoor enthusiasts, the ones that hunt and the ones that just simply like to ride on trails. So that's basically what the amendment is, members. And again, we had this on the floor, had pretty decent discussion on the floor. It passed, and I would like to see it also in the Game and Fish Bill moving forward. And I ask for your support. And you can stand for any questions.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sorry, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't think I was on the floor. I think I was excused when this came up on the floor. But I do have concerns, and I have had expressed these concerns before in Finance Committee when members have brought forward amendments like this that I think should be the purview of the Policy Committee. And, you know, there's no financial implication here, to my understanding, and I don't feel that I'm knowledgeable or educated enough to be able to vote on an amendment like this. So I would not oppose it. I would not support it. And I think it needs to be seen by Senator Marty's committee.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, and we do oppose this amendment, and I
I agree with Senator Pappas's concerns. This is a huge policy impact. When the hunter exemption, which is the brochure I handed out, talks about hunting and ATVs. When we were going through, I'll call it the ATV wars back in the early 2000s, bear baiting was specifically left off of the table during the hunting exemption because of the damage that can occur but going back and forth for a period of 2 weeks. So this is a big policy change. We have to be ADA compliant. If there is somebody that has a health reason, we will issue them a special permit to do these activities within the state forests. But to allow this carte blanche within the state forest system without a full policy discussion, we believe will have impacts. And just briefly on this map, if you open it up, one of the concerns that we have is the green forests right here, Senator Thomasoni's, Senator Saxock, Senator Stump's districts. These forests, you're allowed to go down an unmarked trail. So we'll now be creating unmarked trail systems out there, which we will have concerns about, which most likely will force us in the near future, if this were to pass, to look at causing these green dots to be yellow dots, whereby you can't travel off of an unmarked trail. So there will be impacts to the recreational trail users if this occurs, probably not immediately, but in the near future. We're going through a phase two process right now, reexamining our forest classification and our trail systems. So we have concerns about doing this without a full discussion within the policy committee and other stakeholders.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, have you looked at any of the numbers? And Senator Pappas talks about this not being a financial issue. What numbers are dropping off because they simply, you know, the older hunter just simply can't continue to enjoy the bear hunt because the four-wheeler, obviously, when you talk about four-wheeler wars, it's been a tremendous asset to the hunter, especially the big game hunter in Minnesota, like in other states where they can actually use those vehicles to get to their stands, use their vehicles to actually extract the animal out of the woods. All kinds of benefits are coming from the four-wheeler out there. And do you have any idea how many people are going to not take the time to apply for that ADA permit? Maybe they're not disabled. They're just simply going to retire from hunting 5 years early because they don't want to carry those pails of bait out there. That's hard work. Do you have any idea how much revenue we could lose?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, in the north of Highway 2, this brown line on the map is Highway 2, right? North of Highway 2 is something we use as a distinguishing
line. We're familiar with Highway 2, yes.
Legislature. Yeah. North of Highway 2 is a quota or a lottery zone for bear hunting. You have to apply for a license. And we have been oversubscribed for the past 5 or 6 years, probably longer than that. So we have more people applying than we are issuing licenses for. So that's not an issue there. The other parts of the state, you can buy them over the counter. I'm not sure if Mr. Bogus has any information on our bear registrations lately. But it's either something that a person does once in a lifetime or they try to do it every year. I would say there's more people who do it once in a lifetime than come back and do it every year. So I am not sure that that's going to have an impact on these bear hunters at all. But we can certainly look into that and get back to you.
Other questions on the Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention we did vote on this exact amendment on Monday. I think the Senator Ingebrigtsen did mention that. And so if anyone is interested in how they voted, it was 33-27. It was put onto the bill. And for Senator Pappas' information, you did vote no on the – you were there, and you did vote no. So just wanted to make sure everybody had that information if they need it. But I guess I'm just wondering if we can already – if under the language we can already retrieve – the bear, why wouldn't it be with an ATV? Just allowing them to use the ATV to put some bait out, I guess I'm a little confused.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, it's that daily activity. A person can go most, if you're in the area, most people are going and checking their baits every day, if not every other day or every third day. It's that back and forth travel down a route that is unmarked through the woods, off of the trail, that we're concerned about, not only from a damage aspect, but from the trail creep aspect, the monitoring, the restoration,
and like I said, how this will impact recreational users into the future. We are now legally allowing someone to go off trail for baiting bear, basically. And as I said, back when the hunter exemption was passed by this legislature, we made a very conscious, or I should say you all made a very conscious decision not to allow this to occur before September 1st because of those impacts from bear baiting. So putting up a stand, retrieving an animal, which is a one-time event most likely, or two times if you're putting up a stand is one thing, but going back and forth every day, causing the trail to become compacted, to become established, so to speak, is our main concern. The transporting or installing hunting stands isn't a problem, but the daily, possible daily use of an off-road trail for bear baiting is our main concern.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Fishbach,
how often in the number, when it says tending traps, I know that's it's a little different, but if there's tending traps, how often do you tend traps? I guess I'm not a bear hunter, so I'm wondering.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, we do have trapping Fishbach. Experts here. I'm sorry, Senator Fishbach.
It's okay.
We do have trapping experts here. We could testify.
We often make the same.
Are putting traps off of the trails. They aren't driving their ATVs by the traps at all because of you need to keep that in as natural setting as possible. There are specific trapping seasons. Some of them are longer than others. For instance, Fisher Martin season is only, it was a five-day season last year, and people aren't, as I said, setting, they don't want an ATV trail next to their traps. So I think most trappers are walking into the woods to set their traps anyway. Some traps need to be tended every day. So during the wolf season, you need to check your traps every day. Other traps have a two-day set time, but it's you can't really compare apples to apples with trapping and bear baiting. You aren't carrying 5 gallons of buckets, 5 gallon buckets of bait with you into the woods. You're just checking a trap, basically. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Engelbrecht.
To those points, if you're going to be carrying a pails to and from every day, you're also going to be making a trail. You won't dispute that. But we're not talking about the hunter here that we're worrying about. We're not talking about big game hunter, the enthusiast who does not want to disturb the area any more than not quite as less of trappers, of course, with scent issues. But we're not talking about the bear hunter here that's abusing the woods. We're talking about those that just all of a sudden take off and start ripping up the trails because they had happened to have seen somebody go off the trail. That can happen now. That can happen now anywhere in the state of Minnesota. It doesn't necessarily make it right or legal, but it can happen now. So what we're doing here is we're just helping out the experience of bear hunting by allowing them to carry these very heavy loads of bait into a site and getting them off of that well-traveled trail. That's all this is, remember. So I'd ask for support of this very common sense thing.
Mr. Chair and members, if I could just add that we did not receive a hearing request for this bill this year, and had we certainly would have given it a hearing, and I, just out of practice, I'd really encourage this group to vote down this amendment. We'd be happy to hear this bill next year and maybe get a fuller breadth of perspective on this, and perhaps it'll be before this body again.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Myers, how long is bear season?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, the bear season typically opens September 1st and runs through October 30th, I believe. Most of the hunting occurs before the grouse opener, which is September 15th or thereabouts. So really you're looking at very concentrated activity, and baiting starts in the middle of August. So you're looking at about a month of very concentrated activity, which now we are validating off-road use. And just one statement on Senator Ingebrigtsen's comments about the very heavy loads. That's one of our concerns, actually not from our Parks and Trails, but from the Division of Forestry. Now you're allowing a person with very heavy loads on an ATV to go off trail. The trails are built to sustain loads. You may be going through some soft ground. Often they're hunting in areas located next to wetlands or marshes in soft territory. So the load issue is a concern we have. This isn't about bear hunting. It's about ATV use, and it's about moving away from where we've been very consistently over the past decade, managed use on managed trails. So that's our biggest concern. It's not about bear hunting. It's not about any other issues. It's about forest health, the damage to the forests, and the impacts to recreational users should this occur.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Myers, when I go out and take and look at where, look for sign, and I see these deer trails and these bear trails and things like that, those trails have been there for years. And are we going to start monitoring deer so that they don't impact the forest land and so they can't go on this continual trail? Are we going to do that with the bear and so forth? I mean, you're doing that with humans now. You're going to do that with the animals themselves too? It sounds stupid, doesn't it? Well, that's what I hear.
Mr. Chair,
if
I could just one more comment, if I could, before we finish up and vote here. No, this isn't about that monitoring of trails. It's about very few hunters in the woods that we're talking about here. Maybe Mr. Meyer, you can tell us how many bait sites do we have that pertains to this particular issue? How many bait sites are we talking about with the literally hundreds of thousands of miles of trails, as well as forests that we have in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this year we'll license approximately 3,500 bear licenses, bear hunters. Each bear hunter can have 3 bait stations under their license. So you're talking 11,500 potential bear sites, bear bait stations, and now you will allow each person to go there. So the miles of trails, and it doesn't have a mile limitation either. I mean, a person could drive 10 miles off road to go do a bear to your bear site. Usually you put a pit there, you put some logs over it, you're going to turn around and come back out, so there'll be a turnaround spot. So now we're going to have potentially 11,000 new trails if everybody did this. Not everybody's going to do it. Some people are going to be on private land. Some people will be in different areas. But it's that concern we have by allowing this that will impact the recreational trail use and forest classification most likely into the future.
All right. So we've had quite a bit of discussion. We've got 3 other bills on the agenda. Do we have anything that's been left unsaid about Senator Ingebrigtsen's amendment?
But we'll take it up later, too. That's fine, Mr. Chair, should the amendment not pass. But this is certainly reasonable, I think, and
well, and I'm not suggesting that you don't have a right to offer the amendment, although as Senator Pappas pointed out, it falls a little bit more onto the policy realm. But we carried over the agenda from yesterday, and we still have one bill left over from yesterday and a couple of other bills. And you know, Senator Fischbach has, often points out we're going to be in session. So do we have further discussion on the A-16 amendment?
No.
Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A-16 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails.
Division
has been called for. All those in favor, please raise your hand. And opposed. On a vote of 7-9, the motion fails. So further discussion, Senator Saxhog.
Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment that involves Section 58. And Mr. Chair, as Senator Schmidt knows, we had some extensive discussion in committee on the muskie minimum size rulemaking. And I made the same motion to basically fall to the DNR position on rulemaking, and we ended up with the Hoffman Amendment, which was amended by the Osmick Amendment. I think that Senator Osmick and most people would recognize that kind of this wasn't the satisfactory end that the muskie advocates had hoped for. And so what I'm hoping for here is again more discussion in the future on this. It isn't like the musky length that we're talking about here. Minimum size is all that small. So Section 58, the motion to remove Section 58 would do would fall to the DNR position. The Muskie advocates have told me that they agree with this, as has Senator Onsmaker. So, Senator Schmidt, I'd be open to any suggestions you have, but at this point.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Stack, if I understand you right, you would have an oral amendment to remove the section?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chair and committee, if I could, this is a language that came to us from Senator Hoffman, and I have to tell you, I've received so much encouraging and supportive news from muskie fishermen regarding the original language, and also the language that resulted is better than nothing. And I think that this is an issue that's come before DNR for a number of years. At their roundtable in January, this received extensive conversation, and I think the view here is that we'd like to push them to do more in making Minnesota an inviting environment for muskie fishing, and to bring folks in from all over the country or the world to have an opportunity to catch a big muskie. And with that said, I'd oppose the oral amendment. I appreciate the conversation about this, but I do think that where we left off in division is better than what's being proposed here today.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I have an indication, though, from Senator Hoffman that he would be in favor of the Sachshaug motion. So. I just heard that from Senator Hoffman's office. So, folks need to know that.
I would just point out that the amendment's deleting something from a committee that's totally policy, where it's not even making a change. But Senator Ingebrigtsen,
Mr. Chair, you took it right out of my mouth. I just overheard discussion at this very table about policy not being brought in here. There's no dollars attached, and I am rather confused. I talked with Senator Sachshaug as well as the muskie enthusiasts, and quite frankly, they are getting something here compared to what we started with in the committee. It is moving forward. So, I voted against the amendment only because I didn't want to put the onerous on the DNR to require them to put the 50 lakes by a certain date. I think dirt date certain here, where we have a 56-inch limit, which is a very, very big fish. The DNR, after testimony, was saying they were actually moving in that direction with their muskie plan. So, quite frankly, we originally started out with we should not put this in the bill, but we ended up doing it. And Muskie Incorporated went from 48 to 50 inches. Didn't get quite to 55, but they got someplace. And I thought it was that part was reasonable. The other part I didn't like. So,
Mr.
what
Chairman.
It's worth, Senator, the author of the bill is right. It is policy, and
you guys have.
I'm torn.
We have Senator Sachshaug's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No. Oh.
Motion fails.
Division, Mr. Chair.
Division requested. All those in favor of Senator Sachshaug's motion, please raise your hand. All those opposed, please raise your hand.
Jesus Christ.
On a vote of 6-8, the motion fails. Further amendments on the bill? If there are no further amendments, does anybody wish to?
I do have another policy amendment, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Oh, no. No.
Qualify by looking at Senator Pappas, by the way. It is a very small amendment, though. It is just one-word amendment, if I could, and I think maybe the author knows something about this. It's on the last page. I could get the DNR and Mr. Lesko from the Minnesota Trappers Association to come forward. I don't think it's a real hard fix.
What's your amendment?
My amendment would be an oral amendment to... And I probably should have some help if I could, because of the parties interested here are very, very concerned about the word conibear in statute. So maybe I can have them or
Mr.
The
Chairman,
DNR helped me out with this.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be real quick.
So I don't really have a whole lot of issues here.
The language in the bill is repealing the word conibear trap. We received communication from the attorneys at the manufacturer of conibear trap. They're concerned about it using their trademark name in statute. We use the term conibear type in statute. They did send us a letter asking us to remove that from statute. That's why this is there. I know the Trappers Association has some concerns about just going to body gripping because that does apply to other different types of traps as well. We do support the motion, but we understand it is related to policy. I think it's something we can do as we move forward with the bill. If the committee so desires, we would support taking it out. We're working with them. Told the manufacturer we'd try to do it. If the legislature wishes to take it out, that's not a problem for us.
I'm still confused by the amendment. Is the amendment to eliminate Section A of our Part A of Section 63? Is that the amendment?
That's correct. The last page, 28.
So would the amendment be to eliminate A and then eliminate B?
No, just A.
No, but not eliminate B, but eliminate the letter B.
Just A. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Bodden, would that be the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, the motion I think would be to delete on page 28, delete lines 2 to 4, and on page 28, line 5, delete paren B, close paren.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Schmidt.
I did have an opportunity to speak with a couple stakeholders regarding this amendment, and I do support it. I understand there's some additional discussion needed regarding this, so I would support the oral amendment.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, if we do delete this, are we still keeping within our statutes the same meaning in that we don't allow those types? How then, once this is deleted, are we maintaining the intent within our bill?
Thank you for the question. And I really do have to turn it over to Mr. Lescombe from the Trappers Association to more clearly explain it than I can by far. That's all right, Mr. Chair.
Certainly. If you could identify yourself. And
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Lescombe. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Trappers Association. And so what has been the wording on Section 23, Paragraph A, has to do with in current Minnesota statute and rule. Traps are defined in different ways. One particular type of trap, which is generally referred to as a body gripping trap, is almost universally described by trappers as conibear type trap. So in every statute and rule where body gripping is within the statute or rule, it is qualified by the term conibear type body gripping trap. Our concern in removing conibear trap, and I've talked to the council for Oneida, who owns a trademark for conibear. We have no concern about it having that term removed from statute, but it would have to be inserted with some other descriptor other than just body gripper, because all traps, just by practical definition, hold or catch an animal by the body. So every trap is in fact a body gripping trap. By keeping the term conibear type where it now is inserted in statute and rule, we'll maintain the current meaning. So without it, certain allowances for conibear type traps would apply to body gripping type traps, which could be confused or argued to apply to all traps. So allowing conibear type to stay where it's at in statute and rule will maintain the current scheme within those statutes. By removing it, it could undo the current scheme.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Sir,
so, Mr. Chair, it sounds to me then you don't support the amendment because you're concerned about deleting in the revisor's instruction the deletion of that phrase.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendment is to not delete it, as I understand it. And we do not want conibear to be deleted from statute. So as it sets out in the bill right now, conibear would be deleted. We're asking, as Senator Ingebrigtsen has moved, to allow conibear not to be deleted. So just delete Section 63, Paragraph A, and then just the letter B from the second paragraph. The B has to do with renaming a chapter having to do with lands dedicated for conservation, nothing to do with trapping.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much for clarifying that. I now understand the amendment.
All right, we have
Senator Ingebrigtsen's amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on Senate File 2227. If there's no further discussion, Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 2227 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Schmidt.
Thank you. Chair and committee.
Then we've got the next three bills on the agenda. I don't believe it should take a long time. There's also a motion I need to present to members at the end of the committee, but we'll go to Senator Pappas, Senate File 2467.
Fall. Oh, it's a dangerous table. Mr. Chairman, this bill was sent to Finance Committee. It's an administrative rulemaking bill because we weren't sure if it had fiscal impact or not. It turns out it does not. But it was good that we did it anyway because it gave the stakeholders more time to negotiate. In your packet is there a negotiated agreement, and so I'm just going to give you briefly what the bill does but not go section by section, just give you an overview, and then administration people here can tell you what the agreement is. So this is a this has to do with rulemaking reform, and the process for writing rules has been slow and complex, sometimes taking up to 2 years to complete. So this bill proposes to reform the rulemaking process that will make the process faster and easier to understand while protecting the public's right to participate and providing the opportunity for independent legal review. There are four significant reforms. One is to put citizens in the driver's seat so that during the rulemaking process, the Office of Administrative Hearing reviews the completed rule to determine whether each individual piece of that rule is needed and reasonable. This process would streamline that, only requiring the OAH to review the pieces of the rule that received public comment. Then we're trying to find the right time for the public to weigh in in making their comments. We're trying to make the rulemaking explanation simpler and easier to understand by modifying the SONAR, which is the Statement of Need and Reasonableness. And we're reforming the hearings process so that citizens would have to submit 50 signatures to petition for a hearing instead of 25. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Commissioner Ken Peterson, who has some comments to make.
Commissioner.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Is that, that's all, I understand that Senator Pappas, you know, gave us kind of an overview, but this is a delete all amendment, that this is the first time that it's being presented, and that seems like we need a little more explanation than just... I understand that it came here because they thought there was finances, but there's not. But if we're going to be adopting this,
I think we deserve more explanation. Mr. Chairman, we will
provide more explanation. Mr. Kadalka will do that.
Because it was simpler for the
stakeholders to have a delete all. Not all of this is new language. It just has been put into a delete all amendment. So he'll talk about what the changes are from the committee. But Mr. Chair, the delete all and maybe the changes, but I've never seen the original bill, so I think we do need a solid explanation of what's going on in the delete all. Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, we will provide that. Thank you.
Sure. If we could just be a little bit patient. Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members, I will Ken Peterson, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. All I want to say, this is an important issue. Too often in the past, the administrative agencies have either erred too much on the side of trying to do an expedited rulemaking and try to run through too quickly, or they've erred going through the more complicated, controversial rulemaking, things have taken too long. It's been very frustrating for the public, for the agencies, and I think for the various advocacy groups. So that's why we've come up with, we think, a workable solution to the problems that we've all had. And Mr. Kadalka can go into more detail with that.
Mr. Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadalka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Working off the delete, I'll go through a quick section by section here of it. Section 1 is a technical change. It's a cross-reference. Section 2 is currently there's an obsolete rules report done annually. The change of the bill changes it to every 2 years. Obsolete rules do not become obsolete that frequently, so it's done every 2 years. Section 3 is a cross-reference because of a repealer later in the bill. Section 4 allows agencies to use electronic means to officially exchange documents with office administrative hearings, revisor's office, legislature, and the public. It brings us into the electric age. Section.
Be sure to say what is the same as what's in policy and then what's changed.
Sure. The Section 1, 3, and 4 were the same as in policy. Section 2 has changed in this amendment. The change was that the initial proposal had the report every 4 years, and now the report is every 2 years. Section 5 allows rules to incorporate by reference, and that is the same. Section 6 conforms with the current process, and it's an efficiency to reduce paperwork and process time. That is the same as the policy committee. Section 7 clarifies current law that the expedited rulemaking process does not have the request for comment needed. That was the same as in policy committee. Section 8 consolidates all of the language in Chapter 14 about notification in one spot, so we don't have to rewrite it each time. We just refer back to it and includes all that information. That is the same as in the policy committee. Section 9 removes a annual report by agencies of the entire record of a completed rulemaking. Under current law, when a rulemaking is completed, we have to send the whole record to the legislature. That is being repealed. Instead, if you look in that same section on B, the agencies actually do real-time updates to the legislature, and we find that is more informative. The whole record is also now being kept on the revisors of statutes office, and so that is one of the that is was in policy committee. One of the changes there in paragraph A is that we're making sure that the legislature still gets the annual docket. That is something that we have on our website that just lists all of our rulemaking and where they are in the process for the public. PCA updates it every month. We would be sending it annually to the legislature. That's one of the changes. Otherwise, the rest is the same as in policy committee.
So she can't say that there's
Section 10 removes the expiration for specific rulemaking process granted by the legislature. Currently, after 18 months, that specific authority becomes void. Unfortunately, a number of the issues that come to the agencies are very new, so there needs to be additional time to come up to speed and usually are complex and controversial. So to provide the adequate amount of time for public comment and involvement, we want to make sure that we don't throw up something haphazardly to make sure we meet the 18 months. Instead, this would allow for us to, the agencies, to continue with the rulemaking but explain why those extenuating circumstances it's taking longer. That's the same as in policy committee. Section 11 is a technical cross-reference. That is the same as it was in policy committee. Section 12 of the bill is one of the changes between here and the policy committee. And this deals with the statement of need and reasonableness. Over time, this has become very rigid, and what we're doing is trying to add flexibility. The change from the policy committee to this amendment are a number of the items are put back into the statement of need and reasonableness. On page 8, if you go to line 8.5 through 8.9, those are coming back into the bill from when it was originally proposed by this amendment. Language on lines 8.20 to 8.23, those were originally stricken in the original version. This amendment adds them back. That actually has a fiscal impact on this amendment, so there is a fiscal impact to the amendment, and what it does is it removes the savings in the fiscal note, so it is a zero.
Okay. So and that's the $6,000 savings that's reflected in the fiscal note, is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
So it actually does have a fiscal implication. So
Mr. Gadelka just said now it's zero.
Canceled out.
Well, it's cancellation, but it still is reflected in the fiscal note as a finance issue.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, the Department of Management and Budget flagged, I thought, in the amendment, page 8, lines 11, 12, and 13, as what generated the potential savings. Am I correct about that, Mr. Canalga?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the MMB's role is in the amendment in lines 8.20 to 8.23 of the delete all amendment. And that's coming back into the bill. That's where they help evaluate the fiscal impacts.
Okay.
He's correct.
Okay, thank you. So, yeah, now it's net zero.
Section 13 of the bill discusses the notification process, and a number of things are consolidated in other spots, and also makes a notice of when things are available. That's for paper reduction. Also was in the policy committee that started. Section 14 is a technical amendment, just adding in hearing record as part of the record. That was a technical amendment issue that is still in, that was in the policy committee. Section 15 clarifies roles between various parties, much like earlier in the bill. That was a technical amendment and was in the policy committee. Section 16 changes the threshold for requesting a hearing from 25 to current law to 50, the original bill, and introduced at 100, left policy at 50, so there's no change in the amendment from that piece. Section 17, again, is part of that consolidation of notification process and other parts, a technical piece, was in policy committee, left policy committee in that way. Section 18, again, you see that change from 25 to 50 signatures. And that was also came out of policy committee. The other one change there is when someone does ask for a hearing request, there is the requirement now that someone has to explain why they have concern with the rule, so that it provides better information for the agency so they can react and provide or make changes as necessary to have a better outcome in the end. Section 19 is a reorganizes section and for clarification, and that was a technical amendment as it left policy. Section 20 deals with the good cause exemption and makes a change there so that when we're adding the conformities for federal or other references, that it is a permanent change. We don't have to make a rulemaking change twice. That is how it left the policy committee. Section 21 deals with the expedited process, and there was some work done here that is reflected in the delete all that was not in the policy. This makes a couple of changes, allows agencies to use the expedited process to conform the federal law changes or regulations or state law changes to help move along those pieces where their policy decision has been made by someone else and the agencies are making sure rules are updated. Then on line 17.5, it does allow for agencies the expedited process for non-controversial rulemakings. These would be types like the agency. We did a MPCA, a water housekeeping rulemaking. It was technical in nature. It took us 10 months to go through a very technical bill. We didn't receive any concerns about it. Through this process, we could move it around in 4 months. This does have a circuit breaker effort so that if the when it goes out for public comment, if 50 folks deem that it is more controversial or more complex and deserves more time, it kicks it back into the full rulemaking process. We didn't define the word non-controversial because that's a term of art, and instead we allow the public to decide what is controversial and they're in the driver's seat in determining where things may need additional time.
Mr. Chair, I've just got a question on that. Where is it that the public determines if it's non-controversial?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it's line 17.12 to 17.24. This lays out the process of the 50 signatures that would kick out any time the agency uses the non-controversial process into the full rulemaking process. So when it goes out for public notice, we would put it out for 30 days, much like we would a full rulemaking, and if they believe that it needs more time, they ask for request for a hearing, and it kicks it back to the full rulemaking process for the agencies.
Mr. Chair, so what you're saying is that only if the 50, the signatures, only if the department receives the signatures is it deemed controversial. Because up on line 17, 5 and 6, it talks about an agency may also use this process to adopt rules it determines are non-controversial. So in those lines, the agency does have the ability to determine. But then I guess you're saying that only if 50 people sign it, it's...
Mr. Chair, just to interject, that what would happen is a lot of cases you know there's going to be controversy. You know you're dealing with a difficult issue. So in those cases, the agency, as you said, the agency would just make it controversial, not wait for signatures or anything. Just do it. Like we had some building code rules we had to run through. We knew they were going to be controversial. We didn't wait for any signatures. Ordinarily, under present law, you could wait for 25 signatures. We knew there wasn't going to be there was going to be controversy. We just went ahead and did it. You'd still continue doing that. The agency, when they know there's going to be controversy, they'd just do it. So the citizens would save the time to do the 50 or whatever number it is.
But Mr.
Then
Chair,
if the agency miscalculated, thought something was going to be non-controversial, they try to do it this way, and 50 citizens said, "No, wait a minute. We think this is controversial." They could take it back to the controversial track.
Mr. Chair, we are increasing the number for the public to determine it's controversial, so we're increasing that threshold. But there's nothing that says the department has to address it as controversial because they can determine if it's not controversial. So, sure, they may just say, hey, we're just going to save ourselves some headache and make it I'm sorry, my throat cuts in and out. But
I guess it's actually the opposite. If the agency says this is controversial, we don't have to wait for 50 signatures. If the agency says this is non-controversial, but they get 50 signatures, they have to do the full process.
But Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, what I'm getting at is it's all up to the agency. Unless they have this, they can say something, you know, we're just going to, because they have that ability to determine it as non-controversial. They, unless they get the 50 signatures, and I'm getting so it still is all up to the agency. Unless they get the 50 signatures, which this increases the threshold for.
And Mr. Chair, following up on Senator Fischbach's question, I too had that concern, and so I'm wondering if you could tell the committee currently what is the process to determine whether or not the legislature weighs in on if there could be expedited rulemaking or not. I think one of the concerns as I read this is that the agency may deem something non-controversial that we in the legislature might actually think is controversial, and just depending on the public to be paying attention because, you know, things happen fast here, and so it's hard to trust that that the public is going to all of a sudden notice that there's something going on that could be of concern. So currently, how is the legislature involved in determining expedited? Do we always have a say in that?
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, just to go back to the former question, too, on page 16 lines, page 18, subdivision 4 there, 18.6 through 18.16, so there is a legal review for these expedited processes to go through, too, with the Office of Administrative Hearings. And the new language there, you can see that the agency has to submit its findings and a summarization of why we're using this process. And then the ALJ makes a determination whether we establish a need for reasonableness and fulfills the other requirements. So they can also, at that point, note and state that if something is very complex or controversial and the agency has overstepped their bounds, there's an opportunity there for someone else to state that. In terms of rulemaking in general, rulemaking cannot be done by an agency unless the legislature gives them the authority. It's either sometimes a general authority that you can do building code standards or a specific one that you may have to do. We were given one to re-update our a specific standard on nitrates. Those are the types. So anytime the legislature has to give that. The legislature then has some other parts during the process, too. Earlier in the bill, we talked about how we notify the legislature of various processes as it's going along to make sure they know, along with the public. But there are procedures within Chapter 14 that committees can ask for delays in the rulemaking process. The LCC can call hearings on the rulemaking process, so there are opportunities during the process also for the legislature to get involved, in addition to the normal process that the public has. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day also, though, the legislature has the ultimate ability to repeal or stop any rulemaking as it's going along. So they first give the authority up front, have opportunities in the middle to be involved with it, and on the back end have the ultimate authority to repeal any rule that it deems the agency step too far.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonham.
Mr. Gadelka, so the amendment that's before us, the change in legislative oversight and authority would be with regard to the being able to determine whether or not a rule is expedited. Is there a change within this? And I apologize if this is obvious, but, you know, once I get the sense of what's happening, then certain concerns come to mind. Is there a change within this that says the legislature wouldn't approve going to rulemaking? Does the agency, given this new amendment, go to rulemaking without approval of the legislature?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's an excellent question. What this does is it changes the different types of paths an agency can move through, the full dual notice, or we go straight to hearing, or the expedited. That's what the language changes. The legislature before that has to give us rulemaking ability. This does not say, for instance, the PCA can start doing social studies curriculum, or Department of Labor and Industry can start doing water standards. The agency had to get the ability to make changes in that rule and that area previously by the legislature.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gadelka, so then still the concern would be around having the legislature no longer be able to weigh in with regard to the expedited part of it, because that is a change. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it is a change, and the agency gets to make that determination. The agency has this power in another part of statute, too. Currently, we can put a rule through the full rulemaking process and schedule a hearing or not. And so we make those determinations on all rulemakings, whether with a level of controversy. If we know it's controversy, we're going straight to a rule hearing, because that's the way it's going to be done. So we have that ability now to kind of do it. This is adding one more path that we can choose for.
And, Mr. Chairman, the issue with the 25, 50, 100 signatures is the agency initially said that, well, most of our controversial bills really do have, there are 100 people who weigh in with an email or whatever. And through the negotiation with all the stakeholders, the number was determined to be 50. So that is a change from the bill as introduced, from 100, I believe, from 100 to 50.
Okay. Other questions? We have a few more bills before session. So, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know that we're under time constraints, so I'll try to be very, very brief. But I do want to disagree with a statement that Mr. Gadelka had made with respect to the additional notice plan that is described on page 18, beginning at line 26, and the involvement of the administrative law judges. I do not believe, under the language that is laid out on page 18, that an administrative law judge is going to determine whether or not a proposed rule is controversial or not. I believe that what the administrative law judge is going to do is review whether or not the agency has fully complied with the procedures that are laid out. And when we see the language that he must, the administrative law judge must approve or disapprove of the plan, the administrative law judge isn't going to be making subjective decisions, at least in my opinion. I think what the administrative law judge is going to be reviewing the actions of the agency to determine whether or not the agency has complied with the procedural steps in the statute.
Okay. All right. And we had a little bit more explanation of the amendment.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the subdivision 6 is the additional notice plan. The legal reviews in subdivision 4, the language there, the OEH does have to make sure that we follow all those steps, and one of them is that we use it because we've deemed it non-controversial. So they do have some opportunity there. They also have the opportunity there to see if it's needed and reasonable. They make that determination there. That was one of the important parts of the agreement we worked out with the groups, is that the office administrative hearings, as you look on lines 18.11, that it is needed in reasonableness, so that the agency cannot be just making things arbitrary and capricious. That's that higher threshold.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the A14-1101 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Pappas' motion. Let me just indicate before we vote on that motion, just relative to this, a little bit minute, but to make the point, relative to the fiscal impact of this bill. The bill is in front of us, has a fiscal impact. There's a proposed amendment which takes the fiscal impact away, but the bill coming into committee does have a fiscal impact, just so we understand that.
That's why we were here.
Yeah. So we have Senator Pappas' motion on the 1101 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries. Further discussion on Senate File 2467.
I move that Senate File 2467 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
On Senator Pappas' motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Okay, then we have Senator Sieben, Senate File 1776. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill that's before you is the are the Executive Branch Advisory Group recommendations. By way of background, last session's legislature enacted a law that required the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy to review executive branch advisory groups. So the LCPFP compiled a list of 162 executive advisory branch groups, and this list was used as the basis for these hearings and subsequent meetings that happened over the interim prior to this session. Should I continue, Mr. Chair? Looked like you had a question. The Speaker of the House, who's also the chair of the LCPFP, sent a letter to the agencies asking them to work with the advisory groups and come up with or to respond to a set of questions that were presented about the advisory groups that are under that agency's jurisdiction. And so then after the responses were gathered, four of us from the House and the Senate, Senator Newman and I, Speaker Thiessen and Representative Holberg met to go through these advisory groups. And the legislation that is before you is really is the result of that work. So some of the advisory group, some of the legislation that is before us recommends repealing some of the advisory groups. Some of the legislation, portions of the legislation extend the expiration of the advisory groups because we found that some of them were still meeting even though they in statute have been repealed or had an expiration date. And then in very few cases there were slight tweaks to the language around the advisory groups. So I introduced this bill at the beginning of the session, and then there were 7 different bills that passed through the relevant policy group or policy committees, and then those recommendations or the results of those bills were compiled in Senator Pappas's State and Local Government Committee, and that bill passed through her committee several weeks ago, and now we're at your committee, Mr. Chair. And perhaps staff could explain the fiscal impacts of the bill or why we're here.
Well, I don't think there's a fiscal impact to this bill. The reason the bill's here is that the Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy has original jurisdiction within the Finance Committee. So other discussions? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senator Sieben has accurately outlined the process that we went through, and there was a collaboration of various members of this commission in an effort to eliminate some unnecessary groups and in some cases reauthorize necessary groups. So I just wanted to indicate that aspect to the members. And I have only one question for Senator Sieben, and if Senator Sieben doesn't know the answer, and we could talk offline. But on page 7, Article 4, there's a Rules Advisory Committee regarding transportation, and I don't remember what that was all about. But when I look at section 1, where it makes reference to 162.02, et cetera, it looks like we're moving some language in the statute. We're not really creating a new advisory committee, and I'm just asking, do you know off the top of your head, or we could visit about it later?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, as I was reviewing my packet here for this bill, I actually was looking at that because, as you noted in the bill itself, there is what looks to be some new language, but I believe I couldn't find a real robust explanation for it. So perhaps, so I don't just guess, maybe we could, if staff knows, otherwise I can try to get the answer from someone else.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, and that's fine. Perhaps before this comes to the floor, we could have staff give Senator Sieben an explanation. It's just that I don't recognize it. I don't remember seeing it. But in looking at the statutes, it looks like we're moving an existing committee rather than creating a new one. But we can get an explanation for that later.
Mr. Chair, I believe what's happening, if I would guess, but I'll confirm that this is right, is we're repealing the County State Aid System Advisory Committee and the Municipal State Aid System Advisory Committee and combining it into one. But that's just my guess. Oh, Mr. Bodern's nodding his head.
And, Mr. Chairman, I do remember now that you mentioned a discussion along those lines.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Bodern.
Senators Sieben and Newman, if you look in the repealed language, and maybe you were headed that way, on 8R, you'll see sections 162.02 and 162.09 are being repealed. And I think then they're being combined in this new section on page 7.
That makes sense, Mr. Chairman. I believe that's correct. Thank you, Mr. Bott.
Do we have any further discussion on Senate File 1776? Okay. If not, Senator Sieben first moves Senate File 1776. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Then Senator Sieben moves House File 1863 with the language of Senate File 1776. Be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And we have a couple of other matters. And I believe they're going to hold session for us to finish. Senate File 2431. Did I have that correctly? No.
243.
Senate File 243. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, before us is House File 683. The companion 243 was substituted with language regarding the establishment of a legislative water commission. The language for Senate File 243 for conservation rate structures has been substituted with the new language. So we aren't talking about water conservation rate structures. For the commission members, this has been before us before, and in fact, the bill is included now in conference committee in Senator Saxog's division, so you're aware of the establishment of a 12-member commission providing oversight on water. Because it did not go to rules as required because of the establishment of a commission, it was called, went back, and referred to finance. There's some alternatives for financing, whether there's the hiring of a full-time person or if it's done through existing staff members. Those would be options, but in terms of the underlying need for the bill, that's been explained previous, so I'd stand for questions.
And Senator Wicker is correct that, that although the bill is in our supplemental finance bill, so it's already been heard and passed, because it did involve the establishment of this commission with legislative members, it had never been heard in the Rules Committee. And so we're kind of repeating what we've already done in this committee. And as Mr. Nauman points out, the fiscal note shows that it's assumed we'll provide the staff support, although we are tracking the $30,000 in the conference committee. Senator Anderson.
I was just going to ask about the appropriation that's mentioned here in the unofficial engrossment. Is that what we're, is that something different? The 243?
Unofficial engrossment.
Senator Anderson, did you wish Mr. Nauman to comment further on that? Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, Senator Anderson, could you repeat yourself? I was having
trouble
hearing.
The appropriation that's located on 2.27 on the unofficial engrossment, has that already been decided prior to this coming to this committee as far as it in another bill? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, yes, that's been carried in the supplemental finance bill, House File 3172.
So this would not be a concern right now for this.
Okay, so again, we've heard this matter. Is there further questions on it? If not, Senator Wicker moves that Senate File 243 pass.
Mr. Chair, would it be the House file?
Well, first, if we could just move passage of Senate File 243.
Okay.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And then if we can move, Senator Wicker moves.
Mr. Chairman. This one's a little different from some of the other House files.
Oh, okay.
You have the unofficial engrossment of the House file as it came from the Rules Committee before Finance, so you actually want to work on the House file itself.
All right, I'm sorry. Okay, so we'd move. So let's, if we can withdraw the, I don't think I called the previous motion, if we can have that withdrawn, and then Senator Wicker would move House File 683 as amended by the language of Senate File 243.
Oh.
Mr. Button. Why did I let me?
I move that House File 683 be recommended, pass, and referred to the floor.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Because we've got the House file. Hey, sometimes I don't get it right. All right. All those in favor of whatever that motion is, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Wicker, and thank you, Mr. Button. Okay, then, members, we've got what I hope will be some quick motions. And if we can have this sheet distributed. Senator Stumpf has requested several bills that have remained in finance to be sent from here to the bonding committee. And obviously he's getting close, we think, to releasing the bonding bill. The bills are Senate File 26. So we actually don't have the bills. I'm hoping people will understand what we're doing. Because in this full committee, we have not heard the substance of the bonding bills. The divisions have been sending recommendations to Senator Stumpf. So we have Senate File 2605, which is the omnibus bonding bill, authored by Senator Stumpf. Then Senate File 882, authored by myself, which is the Minnesota Museum of American Art bonding request. Then Senate File 1977, authored by Senator Stumpf, which is the public housing rehabilitation bond issue and request. And then finally, Senate File 2170, which is the University of Minnesota HEPA request authored by Senator Stumpf. Senator Stumpf, did you wish to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. what we're doing is moving these bills to the Capital Investment Committee so that we can use these different bills as the vehicle for the bonding package that will come out on Monday. And so it'll that's basically what we're doing. There'll be two bills, basically a GO bonding bill and then also a cash bill.
So do members have any questions
If not, Senator Stumpf would.
Just a real quick question, and I don't the intent here at all. It's just was our senator informed of this? I guess is this something new, or was this on the agenda? I mean, this is procedural. It's not a problem.
Yeah,
we don't have to go through these bills.
Yeah, this is something we found this morning, that these bills were still in finance. And because of the timing of the bonding bill at this point, this is the only opportunity to move them to the Capital Investment Committee.
So I guess my question is, if this was put on the agenda like it probably should have been, we wouldn't be discussing these bills individually because we've already done that.
No, we assume they would have just simply been sent to Capital Investment. So this actually is nothing different than we've been doing normally. So, so Senator Stumpf moves that Senate File 2605, Senate File 882, Senate File 1977, and Senate File 2170 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. That concludes the agenda. We will have one meeting Monday, Tuesday, on, I believe, Senator Dibble's medical marijuana bill and I'm guessing Senator Sharon's cigarette bill. So, but we're not sure what time that'll be. So, committee's adjourned. Mr. Chairman.